think of, like you're describing, it sounds like some of the, you know, maybe there's an in, it becomes even more important for the family to advocate in the absence of other advocacy or advocacy resources. So like, that's something I think about. But what would you add, if you could add something to the picture of what is, you know, you say more community, more opportunities for inclusion and to ensure that people...
it's just a text chain.
Okay. Is there another, like in an ideal world, what would be there for those people entering that world with limited, for limited communication skills and social skills?
I have thought about this. You know, what, and again, kind of focusing on those early adults. I guess it's kind of like, what would anybody want? You know,
right.
You'd want opportunities to be around other people and to be doing things that are interested in. And it makes me think, you know, is there a way to kind of strengthen and broaden our community resources in a way that beyond ramps, I guess, it is beyond ramps, like wheelchair is kind of accessible and meaningful. And I, you know, and I don't know what that would be necessarily, but I think, and, you know, again, what would, you know, and there are, you know, so that's one thing I've been thinking about a lot is what, and again, it's the recreational side of things, but what is out there for people to do, to feel part of their community and to just be content, whatever their ability is.
Right.
I actually join the Parks and Rec Committee, kind of thinking to have that viewpoint of what else could be there. You know, what's the roadblock right now? Is there a real roadblock? Maybe there isn't a real, just a perceived roadblock, and that's why there. You know, and there are opportunities. So I think I don't know. I kind of wish it wasn't as siloed, you know. I wish services followed throughout the span. It wasn't like this is school, this is developmental services, this is this. That it was more, you know, okay, this is you, and we're going to support you through the lifespan with your family. You know, that would be a neat way to look at it. And I have to say that it's very collaborative. I don't have issues communicating with community associates or other agencies. I think it's more the roadblocks come in just that it's when everyone has their own understanding and understanding and roles,
right?
It can be difficult to figure out what's available because you have to go to different people with different, and I guess that's just part of kind of society in general, especially with budget limitations, you know, and rules about who can do what.
Right.
So I guess I wish it was more integrated.
Yeah. Well, that makes me sad and a little bit scared.
Well, I think, again, I think coming from the, I don't really experience the other end as much. And so there is that I'm handing this person who I've, you know, find precious off to agency, and I hope, you know, I trust that we'll, you know, be able to, you know, keep this kid and get involved and happy. And I think a lot of people are.
Right.
And so, if that makes sense, you know, I think it's just that unknown when you, here you go. That's a little scary, and I wish it wasn't like that, I guess, that it was more, like I said, integrated.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as siloed.
Yeah. Well, that gets at what would you change about the services? Do you have, you know, you, and you also referenced especially those who have communication, you know, that it's hard for people with communication impairment and intellectual disability and you know,
behavior challenges, that can be a real separating factor.
Right.
And that, I think that poses a challenge
right.
for integrating is, especially, and like I said, things are changing. I think that kind of functional communication and point of view, where if there is challenging behavior, it, you know, could kind of help the individual figure out how to get their needs met in a way, you know, and is becoming more pervasive. Like I said, more and more so, people are including that as part of the support plan, is recognizing that there's still some, especially with communication skills, to learn, mm-hmm. especially with these adults, because that's another fear is, I think, you know, like what happens to those adults that still have some behavioral challenges? Yeah. Are they gonna, you know, be accepted, or is that gonna be a real roadblock for them to being able to access services?
Right.
And I think there will be services. It's just like how, what are they gonna look like?
Yeah.
And like I said, I really feel like, it, you know, it could be like, you know, when you send your kid off to school, you don't quite know what happens behind closed doors.
Right.
I'm hoping. I'm a little nervous that they're going to be able to take care of my baby.
Right.
<You know>?
Yes. Indeed. Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately with people with limited
or understand.
Verbal capacity, understand. I, you know, you've shepherded these people for
years. It's like, how can I help you really understand how wonderful this person is?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting a little teary-eyed.
I know. Aww. Well, we'll have to follow up on a more specific level, and you can give me more, like, my marching orders for how to be good, how to do what I need to do. So do you feel like we've answered the question, what do you think the current system of developmental services in Vermont does well?
Well, one thing I think it does fabulously compared to, and again, it's a limited understanding. I just kind of get a gist of what services in other states are like, mm-hmm. going to conferences and having people talk about the systems that they work in, that I really appreciate that there isn't kind of an institutional system in Vermont.
You mean like congregate care?
Yes, congregate care, specialized workshops, specialized, that we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We don't have a room where there's an assembly line with bolts, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, and we don't ship people off to a building for, you know, services, which, you know, so Vermont does that wonderfully. It's really, and it's an inclusion state, which I know some does have its challenges, but at the heart of it, we're not hiding kids away. And I think that's a hugely important thing, because there's no reason to do that. And I also think that's dangerous.
Yeah. That's good.
So Vermont really, holds that idea of inclusion, normalization, habilitation, really at its heart, that they really want. And, mm-hmm. and with adult services, even though, like I said, it makes me nervous, initially, when I was told that kind of the philosophy is that we just support them where they are.
Right.
I was like, you know, but, you know, hope that keeps them potentially a little bit limited, you know, because if they are not kind of supported to try to learn different ways to communicate, you know, and keep growing, then their world doesn't get bigger.
Right.
So, but like I said, things are shifting, and I think.
Yeah.
That idea that you can be a lifelong learner,
without
imposing kind of something upon an adult that's like beyond their right. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So supporting them where they are implies, you know, largely in home with at home in a family setting.
I think it's a combination. There's a lot of, like I said, the community-based program isn't necessarily center. Like there are places here to do activities. Like there's a sing-along, there's a book club. There are other, like, you know, there's Special Olympics type events. So there's some aggregate activities, but for the most part, the plan is designed by the individual and the family, and they go and do what they want to do.
Right.
Whether it's in their home or whether it's out in the community.
Right. Well, but I meant in terms of, you know, if we think about institutional care, you know, putting people in institutions, takes them, you know, if they are cared for where they are, the living right. arrangement tends to be, you know, that makes that very amorphous, right? There are a range of possibilities for how adults with autism and intellectual disability live in the community, mm-hmm. but they're more limited, right? People living at home with their parents.
There are a couple of like kind of group style homes. Mm-hmm. They're supported apartments, but mostly I think it is family mm-hmm. care or developmental home care.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean by developmental home care?
It would be cause kind of like foster care, but for specifically for individuals with developmental challenges. So an alternative living situation, okay. but it's like being in a home.
Uh-huh.
Or you are in a home. It's not
right.
like being in a home.
Right, yeah.
It's maybe not your biological family home.
Right, yeah. Cool. Thank you. I'll have to look into that more. I'm just, you know, I don't know as much about that as about what the limitations of possibility. Not that I want, you know, for my own child to have that. You know, I want to keep them with me forever, and I want to live forever so that I can care for Robbie until he dies, but, you know, that's just...
I've like heard of combinations of, like, living at home but having kind of a respite home provider,
yeah.
so maybe a couple days a week
yeah.
they live there, you know. I don't think it's an all-or-nothing
yeah.
situation.
Yeah.
So I think the system in Vermont, you know, I guess it's always a question of how many services are available, but I think at heart it's flexible and
mm-hmm.
family-based.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry.
It's this or this, nothing uh-huh. or what we offer you.
I don't know what time it is. Okay. How you've been doing this work for a while, mm-hmm. right? So how have you seen changes in the course of your career in the way that Vermont supports people with developmental disabilities and people with autism?
I think when I started, let's see, that was like 2004, and I think that was probably kind of at the point where autism was becoming more understood,
mm-hmm.
kind of just in public and
yeah.
Media.
Yeah.
So I think there was that. And I think things have come a long way in my mind, and I guess I can only speak specifically to our services, where
mm-hmm.
kind of the way I was initially trained, it was very kind of cookie cutter. You have these programs that you do at a table. There's a very
right.
specific way of teaching. Everyone kind of learns the same curriculum, and luckily, it was after kind of that earlier kind of behavioral approach, which
right,
involves
some cattle prods yeah. and things
so
like that.
It was already,
yeah,
it was yeah. positive. It was errorless learning. There was no punishment involved, but
right.
it was still a little bit rigid. And
mm-hmm.
so I think we've learned over time that that's not necessary, that
yeah.
it's better to teach naturalistically, even if process may be slower
mm-hmm.
or you may not see, but it seems like the learning is deeper.
Yeah.
Learning more by doing, or you know what I mean, rather
mm-hmm.
than learning kind of artificially at a table.
Right.
So that's something that we rarely do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a change.
Yeah.
So I think that
yeah.
understanding that even though it may be messier and less, the data is not as good.
Yeah,
does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yeah.
It's better to teach loosely and to teach naturalistically.
Right.
That makes sense. So
that
that's
makes
a huge
a lot of
change.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Now when I look back,
yeah.
I started out like, oh, it's from a good place, but.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I guess that kind of. Going to say about that? Do you feel like one of the questions that I have, it's not on here, but it's about, you mentioned sort of the way that autism people's sort of general understanding of autism and sort of the way that the media has taken up autism. Do you have any, you know, are you comfortable with, I mean, are you comfortable with the way that autism is understood broadly, and the way that it gets mediated through the news or, you know, popular culture, things like that? Do you feel like they're good? Has that all been positive from your perspective, or are there limitations to the way that, and the work that you do gets represented?
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like I said, like we've evolved, but I don't know if all mm-hmm. ABA programs have evolved. So I think some of the criticism is fair, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. I think there can be people very nervous about, and when they hear, you know, ABA supports, it sounds, you know, very rigid, and so, you know, there may be practitioners out there that are, because that was kind of the history of it, you know.
Right.
For good, you know, and a lot of good reasons, they found this is a way that these kids that people felt like they couldn't learn were figuring out that you can teach people non-verbally, so we
right.
can teach them, you know, ways to get their needs met,
mm-hmm.
but just that early stage was, you know.
Right, pretty oppressive in some ways.
So,
yeah.
Where was I going with that? What were we talking about? I lost my thread.
Just the way that the work that you do is understood.
Yeah, and I think I used to every year do that Vermont Institute. It was that mm-hmm. autism conference at the UVM, and I would just volunteer and just
uh-huh.
help out for the week, and it was interesting because it's definitely, I think, it's a diagnosis that represents such a range of skills, and there
yeah.
are, it's very different
mm-hmm.
for the kids that have the autism diagnosis, but can advocate for themselves, and though they're quirky and still have a lot of struggle. Versus the kids that either it's a combination of they really have a difficult time communicating, you know, they may have some self-injurious behaviors, you know, it's a different world, and so it's hard. I'm sure it's difficult as a parent to kind of understand. You know what I mean? Because I think not everyone's understanding is that it's such a, like, it, even though spectrum is in the title.
Right.
<you know? laughs> That, and I think you talked about before with the early intervention, that
yeah.
that I think that can confuse families, because
mm-hmm.
I think there are some individuals that are always going to struggle with communication, and we can
mm-hmm.
help them grow, but it's not something that they're going to be cured of.
Right.
If that makes sense. And I think that can be hard when if the media is telling you that, you know, 40 hours of early intervention, the younger is going to make everything better
right.
forever, you know, and,
yeah.
and I think that can be difficult. So it's a hard one to,
yeah.
I'm glad there's media attention because that means there's resources. If there wasn't
right.
that, they would have never passed a bill saying that we can, you know, that insurance can provide these services.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's actually really good to know. I mean, I know that, I mean, I'm a so-called consumer in this process, but, you know, one worries about Medicaid and what that's going to mean, but it sounds like maybe because of the law that implicates people's private insurance, that helps to mitigate any changes to Medicaid. Is that, for the impact that will have on
yeah,
available
and
services?
I think Vermont, not every state mandated Medicaid as well.
Okay.
But Vermont did.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
How much that's going to change things if Medicaid
yeah.
gets
yeah.
squished.
Yeah. But it is concerning for adults.
Or insurance in general getting squished. Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, because you can only keep your kid on your private insurance until they're 25.
Yeah. Right? What is that? The whole, I don't know if they would consider autism a pre-existing condition.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And what the CAP means when you have individuals that are going to need support for their entire life.
Yeah.
So those are.
Yeah. Let's not think about that. Okay. But I guess, you know, you did allude to some of the, you know, tensions with autism self-advocacy, and, you know, I'd love to talk to you more about that at some point, you know, just how sort of the issue about who has, you know, how did the needs of people who are at one end of the spectrum get met, and how do their, what are the nature of their advocacy needs relative to people at the other end of the spectrum who are capable of self-advocacy? You know, those issues of lifelong dependency versus, you know, a capacity for independence and autonomy. You know, those are just questions. Those are things that interest me, because I do, like, I think like you, there's some concern about the fact that representations tend to highlight success stories or, you know, quirkiness as opposed to more profound impairments that come with autism. So.
Yeah, and I always wonder about that. And maybe I'm not very savvy politically or, you know, with fundraising or anything, so I don't know whether there's the reason for that, where they find that more resources come and there's stories to celebrate. As long as it means that that trickles down to, you know, the broad population, I guess. But also that, you know, can we make, it's one thing to make a home for the kids that had the more Asperger's profile, but can we make a home in this community for the kids that are more, you know, with their communication challenges and processing challenges? So I guess, I guess there is that nervousness that that population doesn't, systems aren't created to give them a place.
The people with the
in
more
the community.
Communication, the more
the,
challenges.
The more challenges,
And
that, like, people think that they don't, they're not, they don't exist anymore. That we Which I don't think so, but I don't know, you know.
And I can imagine that working with children, that you have parents who are like, why isn't my child progressing? Why aren't they getting back on that developmental ladder? And, you know, that, that some families have high expectations of themselves and of their children and of you, you know, how to get them to that place that they may never arrive at. Because the people are given these false promises, I think, with intensive early intervention.
Or with alternative
communication.
Well, not alternative communication, alternative treatments. I think that can be like confusing for families too. The idea that diet's gonna fix their neurological wiring. Maybe.
So I guess the last question, I feel like we've talked a little bit about the philosophy behind the services you provide as you understand it, right? That you're, do you want to say anything more about that?
Sure. There's this article that everyone has to read a million times when you become a behavior analyst. I can't remember the title of it, but it's by, it's 1968 by Bear, Wolf, and Risley. I can send you the article.
Wolf and Bear.
Bear, B-A-E-R, Wolf, W-O-L-F, and Risley, R-I-S-L-E-Y, 1968.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think the first issue of the Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis, where they talk about, this is awful because I teach it, and I always, I can't remember things like, you know, acronyms, but there's a bunch of different things that hold, like, important, like the supports need to be, there's accountability, but overall, but that's the end part, but that the goals need to be meaningful, that if we're going to be teaching goals, they have to be meaningful to the individual, and that they lead towards access to more happiness, basically. That we've got to always make sure that whatever we're doing to support them, it really, we need to see that it makes their life better. And then there's some other stuff that isn't as interesting probably to the larger community.
I'd love to read it.
Yeah, it's short. Okay. It's a nice article. But it's just the whole idea that we, because there's been some terrible uses of behavioral, so, you know, interventions. One of the, we often, in the ethics classes that we review some of the stuff that was done, in the you know, where behavior modification things were done to try to make people not gay anymore, you know,
yeah.
horrible, like, you know, things. So that's when you impose your own, you
right.
know. So I think that behavioral supports can make, they have to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, done in a way that you're not imposing your own
right.
Needs or, you know, onto somebody else.
But that can be challenging, right, from a philosophical standpoint, because especially if you take a person like Robbie, how can you know what he wants?
That's
like
absolutely
what, yeah.
true. And that's where the, you know, accountability, where we want to make sure it's like you approve of the goals, the school approves of the goals.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we can tell, I didn't mean to mention.
Oh, no,
kid's
no.
name.
That I, we're going to yeah. go. We're, yeah. we're going to. This doesn't go into the record.
But. Like, are we at least reading his, how he's responding? Is if this isn't important to him, we're going to stop, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
It's that, and especially as they get older.
Right.
I mean, think about, you know, the kids that don't like school, you know?
Uh-huh.
We make them go to school until
right.
they're a certain age.
Right.
But, you know, at this age, you know, when someone's between 17 and 20,
yeah.
you know, when do we say, okay, you get to not do this anymore.
Right.
You can say no.
Right.
So
yeah.
So how do we help? You know, it's that balance between helping them know how to say no, but also helping them not be anxious about new activities, so their world isn't too small.
Right. Yeah.
So. No, absolutely. That's a tough one.
Yeah. I had one last question. Do you, are you okay
mm-hmm.
with that?
I'm
but
fine.
Did you have any questions that you wanted to ask?
I have one question about, I wonder, like, whether you feel like you're well supported in the work that you do, in terms of, like, are you paid enough? Do you have good hours? And also, like, do you have, like, access to, like, training that you need? And, like, do you get to go to conferences that you, I don't know?
Yeah, community mental health is kind of a state-funded, it's a non-profit, you know, it's based on how much we are able to, like, they give us in Medicaid in general. So I think for what it is, I'm very well supported. I think here, at least, I don't know if I can speak for other people, but I feel like I'm appreciated, you know, our program is appreciated, and we're able to, yeah, so we, in general, no, we don't have a great training budget, but I tend to just do it myself anyways. So, I don't know, that's a hard one.
You know, as a parent, one of the, I'm so glad Robbie's part of this program, because I do feel like, not compensation-wise,
yeah.
because I think you got, you know, I'm sure it, community mental health is undercompensated, sort of relative to the importance of the work that they do, and that's a problem with the, you know, and, you know, I feel like the people that, who are interventionists with Robbie, I would love for them to be paid even more than I assume they are, but at least they get benefits here, right?
They do.
And they also get supported just in their, you know, that's what I worry about, putting Robbie with just a random person, and, you know, without someone to consult, to come and support when needed, that, you know, that would be very demoralizing to that underpaid person without benefits, who was a para provided by the school district, right? So, you know, if you're going to be a caregiver, in, you know, being a caregiver with the kinds of, like, someone who you support in as a caregiver,
right.
is in a much better position than a caregiver who's just getting the base, who's a part-time person getting the base pay that, you know, Medicaid mandates for that kind of work, right?
Yeah, and we, you know, we've been doing home-based services for a little over a year now,
yeah.
and one of the big differences I've noticed is that it's kind of what you're speaking to, where the one-on-ones in the school program, because it's funded more stably,
mm-hmm.
Because it's partially funded through the schools, that we can just hire somebody, they're salaried, they have a position, I can give them as much time as I need,
yeah.
it's not like a weird ratio of hours that, you know, that insurance services dictate.
Right.
So they feel supported, they feel like it's a profession, and they're treated like it's a profession. Where the home base, we try, but the model's different. These people are hourly. It's different, and I think that might be what it's like as a para or you know other programs where, because it's not as well supported, you don't feel like you've chosen a profession. You feel like you have a job,
right?
And I think with that can come more stress,
right?
More turnover, less feeling like you can have a say in what you're doing,
right? Right.
So that would be, I guess that would be something nice to change, is that if that direct care provider role was more valued across programs, that they could have that, that it was seen more as a profession rather than, that's probably true for a child. Well, child care, I think, has come a long way.
It's still poorly done.
Yeah.
We don't value care in our society in the way that we should.
Like, you never hear anyone coming out of school be like, oh, I want to be a behavior interventionist. I want to be a direct care provider. You know what I mean? Which is a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It seems like people fall into it, but find that it's a rewarding
thing.
And I guess that, you know, I had in an ideal world, how would you like to see autistic adults receive care and be included in their communities? And you sort of spoken to that a little bit, but I mean, not in an ideal world, but in a possible world. But do you have in an ideal world, like a vision of what it would be like?
Gosh, it's hard. I think, you know, when one of the bummers about school, and it's not across the board, but you do feel like you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, trying to make a home for them. And it's a lot of work, but, you know, trying to figure out how do we help this person fit in here and have a home. And that's difficult, and it would be great if we didn't have to do that.
Right,
That our society was designed in a way that we didn't have to, we had more shaped holes.
Exactly.
So yeah, I guess that's a great answer.
That's great. I like that. Well, thank you.
So,
is there anything else you want to add?
No, I hope I didn't say anything too stupid.
No. Thank you so very, very much.
Sure.
It's